Our solar system is a wondrous place with a single star, our sun, and everything that orbits around it, planets, moons, asteroids, and comets. What do we know about this beautiful solar system we call home? It's part of an even larger cosmos with billions of other solar systems.
Hi, I'm Jim Green, Director of Planetary Science at NASA, and this is Gravity Assist. With me today is the man about Mars, Bruce Jakowski, from the University of Colorado. He's our principal investigator of NASA's MAVEN mission. Now, MAVEN was launched in 2013 to study the atmosphere of the red planet. And MAVEN's been in orbit doing fantastic observations of the solar wind. You know, maybe many in the public don't realize that the sun constantly outgasses in every direction. And we call that the solar wind. And it has enormous effects on our environment. That's what the planets are swimming in. And MAVEN is designed to study that and its interaction with Mars. So what have you found out?
We've been looking at the way that the solar wind and the sunlight hits the Mars upper atmosphere and can drive gases from the atmosphere into space. In effect, the way the sun and the solar wind can strip gases away from the planet. Over the long term, that has the ability to change the climate by removing so much gas from the atmosphere. What we've discovered is, in fact, that is what's happening. The bulk of the atmosphere, the largest fraction, appears to have been removed to space. And that stripping of the atmosphere appears to be responsible for changing the planet from a warm, wet environment early in its history to the cold, dry environment we see today. That's a major change.
You know, what's really spectacular about the data that you're taking and then the visuals that you create globally of what's happening at Mars is where that escape is coming from and what does it look like from a global perspective. Can you describe that?
We're seeing a lot of different processes taking place and all adding up. Hydrogen, for example, comes from water in the atmosphere, and hydrogen is light enough, it can just escape to space directly. Things like oxygen, which come from water or from CO2, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, are not light enough that they can just escape on their own. They need the solar wind to grab them and knock them out. So we're seeing a lot of different processes trying to understand how they play together. To me, what makes this exciting is that we're looking at the thin, tenuous part of the upper atmosphere, so thin that we would call that a vacuum if we were doing experiments here on Earth. Yet, that's where all the action is in affecting the climate at the surface of the planet, the ability of water to flow over the surface, and really controlling the degree to which Mars could have been habitable by microbes.
Some of the processes at Mars are unique in the sense that we don't experience them in and around our Earth because of our strong magnetic field. So you do have a magnetic field instrument on MAVEN, and you have been measuring magnetic fields. What are you finding out?
We have a magnetometer in order to measure the properties of the solar wind as it comes in, and also what I'll call the morphology of how the solar wind interacts with the planet. It turns out that there are regions of the crust that have a magnetic field. Mars doesn't have a global magnetic field, but it has localized crustal magnetism. And those create little pockets of protection over the atmosphere where the solar wind can't hit them. But they cover a very small fraction of the surface. And overall, we're seeing interactions between the solar wind and the ionosphere and the planet that have a significant effect.
What really intrigues me about that remnant magnetic field, you know, that stuff that's trapped in the crust that you actually measure, is it's a hint of the past. What do you think happened to the magnetic field?
Well, you've got it exactly right. Mars appears to have had a strong magnetic field, a global magnetic field early in its history, and that magnetic field is recorded in the ancient crust. The younger crustal regions don't have it, so we think the magnetic field disappeared. The magnetic field on the Earth is formed by motions within the molten iron core. You have an electrically conducting material like metal, and it's moving, and it creates a magnetic field. Mars would have done the same thing early in its history, But when the magnetic field stopped, that must have indicated that the core froze out. It became solid. The Earth's core is still molten, is still generating a magnetic field that we see today, but Mars has stopped.
You know, here on Earth, one of the things that everyone knows is that our magnetic field helps organize particles, and we see occasionally aurora when the sun gets really active and hammers our magnetosphere. So there's remnant magnetic fields on Mars, but does Mars have aurora?
It does, and in many ways it's more interesting than what we see on Earth. Of course, I'm going to say that, because on Mars, we don't have a magnetic field to stop the solar wind. So the particles from the solar wind come in and can hit the atmosphere directly. So we see aurora generated by electrons that are hitting the atmosphere, and they're spread out over the whole planet rather than concentrated in northern latitudes as on the Earth, northern and southern latitudes. In addition, we see aurora generated by hydrogen hitting the atmosphere. And occasionally we see aurora created as these particles from the sun hit the crustal remnant magnetic fields and get focused into small regions. And that's the most analogous to aurora on the Earth because it's connected to the magnetic field. But most of the aurora on Mars aren't connected to the magnetic field.
You know, one of the spectacular moments that we had in planetary science was the passage of an Oort cloud comet right in front of our planets. You know, we think about how that may influence our climate, our activity by being hit by objects, but here is a comet, you know, and indeed sighting spring passed by Mars. What was that like in the MAVEN data?
Well, let me start by telling you what we thought when we heard about comet sighting spring for the first time. It was discovered about a year and a half before MAVEN launched. And when it was initially discovered, they didn't know the orbit well enough. There was a chance it could hit Mars. And my first reaction is, oh my God, if it hits Mars and we're in orbit around it, the debris sent up by that impact would destroy our spacecraft. Fortunately, as they learned more about the orbit, they knew it would pass close but not hit it. And the orbital dynamics was such that MAVEN would get there a month before the comet, and there was nothing we could do about it. We were worried about surviving the comet passage because of all this dust that comes off the comet. And we debated, should we put extra shielding on the spacecraft? What should we do? In the end, we did the thing that the engineers were most comfortable with, which was nothing. We took no precautions on the spacecraft, but operationally we did. When we were in orbit around Mars, we timed where we were in our orbit so that we were shielded by the planet for about 20 minutes during the time of the peak dust flux to protect the spacecraft. For several hours, we turned edge on to the flow of dust in order to minimize our cross-section so that less dust would hit us. And we survived. We couldn't even tell that there was a comet there from the spacecraft itself.
Well, you know, that must have been a spectacular event if you were standing on Mars looking up at night, seeing the material coming in, just like our shooting stars here.
We see on Earth meteor showers that are pretty spectacular, but they're left over from dead comets. To have a comet pass this close to Mars, only 140,000 kilometers away, and to have the coma of dust and gas hit the planet directly, it would have been a spectacular event to see.
Well, you know, I was delighted that all our spacecraft survived, you know, that we didn't have major problems with those. But, you know, there are other objects in orbit around Mars that, as I understand, MAVEN had to avoid. Can you tell us a little bit about your encounter with one of the moons?
Well, let me start with the difficulty we have in orbit, because there are a lot of spacecraft and their orbits evolve with time. And every now and then, the orbit of MAVEN will cross the orbit of one of the other spacecraft. And we call those COLA seasons, COLA for collision avoidance. We occasionally, maybe once or twice a year, have to do a maneuver to make sure we don't come too close to another spacecraft. But recently, we had a collision opportunity maybe that's the wrong way to put it, but but a possibility that we would collide with the moon Phobos. And in that case, the orbit predictions were such that we were definitely going to hit it if we didn't take action. We did a maneuver about 5 days in advance of that collision in order to avoid it. So instead of hitting it, we missed it by about 200 kilometers. We have to watch constantly every day to make sure we're not going to hit something.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. You know, it's getting crowded at Mars, so to speak, but in a nice way. This is the way I like it.
Well, today there are 5 or 6 spacecraft in orbit. MAVEN, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, Mars Odyssey, the Indian MOM mission, the European Space Agency, Mars Express, and their recent addition, the Trace Gas Orbiter. And these are the ones that are operating today. In addition, there are dead spacecraft, Mariner 9, Viking 1, Viking 2, the Russian Phobos mission. All of these are in orbit, and it's getting pretty crowded there.
Yeah, and Mars Observer, as I remember.
No, Mars Observer sailed on by without stopping.
We're sure of that.
Yes.
Well, you know, Mars is hard. Sometimes we can't always pull off what we want at that planet. I'm here with Bruce Jakowski, my man about Mars, and we're talking about that fabulous MAVEN mission. I'm always interested in how we get into this business. You know, this is an exciting thing to do, and everybody I talk to, there's typically something happens that gives them that gravity assist that propels them into the science that we're doing. What was that like for you?
You know, I was always interested in space, and I remember being a six-year-old sitting in front of the TV watching the countdown of the first Mercury astronauts in the very early 1960s. But for me, what really set me on this path was when I was an undergraduate at UCLA. I was a physics major, and I got bored with the classes because all they were doing was teaching us tools and techniques. So I started looking around for something else, and I took a planetary science class from Hugh Kiefer, who was one of the professors there. By the end of the semester, I had changed my major. I was working for him on the Viking mission, and that really set me on this path. So it happened to be one class that happened to be offered when I was looking around for something else to take.
Thanks, Bruce.